A few nights ago, I was coordinating plans with another mom, processing a work email I had received, connecting with a kid about their day, responding to a text about my grandpa being moved into hospice care, making dinner plans, ordering pizza from the school fundraiser night, and I was doing all of that while shopping for a birthday gift for an eighth grader. When I got home from that errand, and dinner had arrived, and the pizza toppings weren't the toppings I had expected, I lost it. I completely lost it. I felt my feelings. I said some things, and then I took my pizza up to bed. The next morning, I woke up and wondered, was it really the pizza toppings that made me react that way? Was it the long to-do list, the shifting plans with the other mom? Was it the starving children in Gaza? Was it the hard email? Was it that I hadn't taken time to move my body that day? Was it the injustice in our country? Was it the fear I have for my children's dearest friends? Or was it perimenopause? It was probably all of those things. And as a result, I went into grasshopper mode. Dr. Donna Volpita came up with grasshopper mode as a tool for children and their families. She's the author of the book, The Resilience Formula, a guide to proactive, not reactive, parenting. She describes grasshopper mode as the time when our brains go into fight, flight, or freeze mode. The grasshopper lives in the limbic system, is focused on short-term survival, and is motivated by short-term rewards. I had, most definitely, gone into fight and flight mode. I attended Dr. Volpita's workshop, How to Raise Resilient and Emotionally Healthy Kids, a few years ago. I went as a parent and as a partner with the kids here at church. She described parts of our brains and how they work using bugs, a language tool for helping kids make sense of what their brains were doing, and also their moms, too. As we understand the brain's natural response to challenge, we can proactively use challenges to build more resilient brain pathways. Going into fight and flight or freeze mode can save lives, but not all challenges need us to go that route. Moving out of grasshopper mode so we can focus on our long-term best interests rather than only the here and now, and our emotions. The prophet Elijah is also, like I was, in grasshopper mode. He has just won this huge contest at Mount Carmel. There was a drought, and Elijah took 450 prophets of Baal, the rain god, and 400 prophets of Asherah, all together to prove that the God of Abraham and Sarah, the God of Rebekah and Isaac, that was the one true God. This contest involved placing a young bull on wood and stones and then pouring water over it and then asking God to set it on fire. Wild story. The fire of the Lord fell and consumed the offering, the story reads, even licking up the water in the trenches. And when all the people saw this, they called out, "The Lord indeed is God. The Lord indeed is God." And then Elijah kills all the prophets. King Ahab tells his wife Jezebel about the killing, and Jezebel says to Elijah, "So may the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life like the one of them whom you have just killed by this time tomorrow." Elijah is not trying to manage a busy family schedule or respond to hard emails, and he's definitely not going through perimenopause. Rather, his life has just been threatened. It makes sense for Elijah to go into grasshopper mode and to flee. So Elijah runs, and he finds a place alone, and there we hear more about what is going on in his brain. Under the broom tree, he prays, "It is enough now, O Lord. Take away my life, for I am no better than my ancestors." He is fueled by fear, which leads to exhaustion, and the fatigue feeds despair. We can't relate to this specific experience of Elijah, the calling on God to prove who God is with a bull on fire and then killing 850 people, followed by our own lives being threatened. But we, like Elijah, do know fear, and we know exhaustion, and we know despair. We know what it is like to work through intense challenges and to be tired. We know the feeling of wanting to be in control and to prove something. We've known what it's like to be in a relationship that causes us harm. We've experienced the uncertainty of a new chapter. And here at church, quite a few. We know the feeling of loneliness and of being alone. We know what it's like to not feel like ourselves and to want something different. We've been stuck. We've wanted ways out. And we may know what it's like to not want to live anymore. We, like Elijah, have been overwhelmed by despair. As part of her training on resistance, on resilience, Dr. Velipada shared ways we can help our brains go from grasshopper mode to what she calls ant mode. Ant mode, she explained, is what happens in the frontal lobe of our brain. The ant plans ahead, works hard, carries tools for optimum brain performance. And when our bodies are well nourished, are well rested, have moved, our frontal lobe does its best work. She calls that operating in ant mode. And if we haven't managed to stay in ant mode, attending to our physical bodies in these ways can help us get from grasshopper mode to ant mode. It's no surprise then that the first thing Elijah does after calling out to God, expressing his fatigue and despair, is to sleep. His body, his mind, his spirit need rest. And God knows what else Elijah needs: sustenance. An angel of God wakes Elijah up and feeds him, nourishing his physical body with bread and water. Not once, but twice. "Get up and eat, otherwise the journey will be too much for you," the angel of God says to Elijah. So I invite you to think for a moment about a challenge you have right now. Is it a challenging relationship at work? A financial challenge at home? A challenge with an aging body? Maybe it's challenging feelings about the season we're in here at church. I invite you for a moment to just think about a challenge you're experiencing. And now, go ahead and check in with your body. How is your body feeling? What does your body need? In a classroom that uses this resilient mindset model, you might hear children saying, "My aunt needs some protein. Can I go get my cheese stick?" Or, "If I'm going to stay in aunt mode, I'm going to need to refill my water bottle." Nourishing and caring for our bodies helps our brains be resilient in the face of challenge. And this care of our bodies is going to look different for each of us. So be aware of your body's needs, because caring for it is a spiritual practice and a practice of resilience too. So after Elijah rests and eats, our reading tells us that he went out in the strength of that food for 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. So Elijah has just gone on a really long walk, a really long walk. And as he walks, I imagine him taking time to cry. Crying, releasing the oxytocin and the endorphins, the chemicals that make one feel good as both physical and emotional pain eases. Crying most definitely helps us move from grasshopper mode to ant mode. My kids' pediatrician always encouraged us to let our kids experience their full range of emotions. And that would mean, which was different than I was taught, to not try to talk them out of their feelings or to try to get them to stop crying. When they were little, it meant moving them to a safe place so that they could do the thing they needed to do. We sometimes call that thing a tantrum. How different it sounds if we describe it as letting oneself feel their feelings. As a parent of young kids in this time, if they were having a tantrum or feeling their feelings, it was our job, Kevin and my job, to move them into a space where they could have that full feeling of feelings and not cause others harm. So we would help them move to a place where it was okay to flail their body parts so that no one else could be hurt while they felt their feelings. As teenagers and adults, it might shift from finding space where we can flail our bodies, but a place where we are flailing words might not cause somebody else harm. So allow yourselves to cry. Allow kids to cry. It's really good for us. So I imagine that while Elijah walks and cries, he also does a lot of thinking. During Dr. Villipeta's workshop on resilience, she said, "Our response to challenges, good, bad, big, or small, is guided by the way we think about four S's: self, situation, supports, and strategies." So think about your challenge again and ask yourself some of these questions. For the S of self, what am I bringing to this challenge? What are my strengths and what are my weaknesses? What can I take responsibility for? For the S of situation, is shame part of the story? Is a desire for power part of the story? Codependency? You can fill in the blank. Is it part of the story? And is it a pattern? What's the situation? And what support systems, the third S, support, what support systems do I have? Some were mentioned in our prayer. Who can I ask for help? And the last question I love is about strategy. Is my strategy to this challenge working? And if not, what isn't working? How has God equipped me to respond in a different way? So once Elijah gets to this mountain, we hear him reflect on these four S's of resilience. When the word of the Lord comes to him asking, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he answers, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." He is doing his best to serve God, and the situation is dire. He is alone without a support system, and he seems desperate for a new strategy. And then he hears God's voice. "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for God will pass by." Elijah goes for it. After acknowledging his hardship and the work it was to regulate, he stands there waiting for God. It's such a vulnerable moment. Brené Brown, the researcher and author who gave one of the top five most watched TED Talks, The Power of Vulnerability, encourages us to be as vulnerable as Elijah is. "Owning our story," she says, "can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it. Embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous as giving up on love and belonging and joy, the experiences that make us the most vulnerable. Only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness," she says, "will we discover the infinite power of the light." So it is true with Elijah. God offers an invitation for an encounter, a theophany, an opportunity to discover the infinite power of the light. And Elijah takes God up on it, waiting for God to pass by. "Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting the mountains and breaking rocks in pieces, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence." The sound of silence. God was there. The sound of no sound. A gentle breeze. God was there. A gentle and quiet whisper. A still, small voice. God was there. God invites us to an encounter as well. I wonder when or where in your challenge, in our challenge as a church, I wonder when we will hear God's still small voice. Will it be in the quiet of your bedroom with pizza in hand? Will it be in the deep breath you take before a hard task? Is God with you in the 24 hours you wait before responding to the email? Do you hear God walk alongside you as your feet rustle in the leaves? Is the still small voice audible when you prioritize your to-do list and take some things off it altogether? Will the gentle breeze of God's presence be clear as you move from fight, flight, or freeze mode into regulation? Is God in the whisper of a friend, empathizing as your body ages? Is God's gentleness near you in the silence after you stand up for someone? the Center of Japanese Studies at U of M hosted a Japan Week many years ago. My kids and I attended the workshop for families at UMA, the art museum. The first half of the workshop was spent in the art exhibit titled The Six Senses of Buddhism. Our docent walked us through the art exhibit, stopping along the way, and then she asked the kids to notice what must be very important in Japan based on what they saw in the various pieces of Japanese art. It didn't take long for the kids to shout out in that "I'm in a museum" kind of whisper shouting way, "Mount Fuji!" When we made our way back to the community art space, we were taught sumi, a type of East Asian brush painting that uses ink in different concentrations. We use this technique to create sansui, landscapes of mountains and rivers. This meaningful experience didn't end here. We were then invited to write a poem using our six senses: sight, sound, touch, smell, taste, and thought. Asher, who was 9 at the time, wrote this poem. The sight of the mountain is beautiful. The sound of the mountain is peaceful. The touch of the mountain is cold. The smell of the mountain is fresh. The taste of the mountain is water. The thought of the mountain is joy. Like Elijah, our faith journey, individually and collectively, is and will continue to be full of challenges. May we keep finding our way up to the mountain, paying attention to our senses and our feelings. May we notice our own vulnerabilities bravely. And there, in that tender place, as we move forward in resilience, God passes by. Next week, Advent begins. That's why we're decorating today. And Jan Richardson, an artist and a poet many of you are familiar with, describes this season of waiting as knowing that something is on the horizon. God is about to pass by. Here's the poem she writes about Advent. The season of Advent means there is something on the horizon, the likes of which we've never seen before. It is not possible to keep it from coming because it will. That's just how Advent works. What is possible is not to see it, to miss it, to turn just as it brushes past you. And you begin to grasp what it was you missed, like Moses in the cleft of the rock, watching God's hindquarters fade in the distance. So, stay. Sit. Linger. Wait. Behold. Wonder. There will be time enough for grasshopper mode. She didn't say that part. There will be time enough for running, for rushing, for worrying, for pushing. For now, stay. Wait. Something is on the horizon.